It's the How Games Make Money podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Grubb from GamesBeat.com. This is the show where I talk to people working in and around games and ask them, how does this business work? New episodes come out each Friday or Monday. I might be switching that to Monday. It's a wild time. Staying pretty busy. My other show, GamesBeat Decides, I think we might be doing that on Friday and doing this on Monday going forward. Just keep an eye on the feed, though. Subscribe and you won't miss anything. On this episode, Tim Nixon, the director of online experience at That Game Company, joins to talk to me about designing Sky, which is the studio's follow-up to Journey and Flower. Unlike those previous games, though, Sky is a live service game that is meant to run for months and years. It has already had 6 seasons of content. And Tim explains how That Game Company uses behavioral data to understand and build relationships with players based on respect. First, though, thank you for listening. You can get more from me at GamesBeat.com. Email the podcast at jeff.grubb@gmail.com with the subject line, How Games Make Money. Or reach out on Twitter. I'm at Jeff Grubb. The podcast is at HGMM Show. All right. Thank you for joining me. Let's get to the interview. All right, let's get right into it. Joining me now is Tim Nixon. Go ahead and say hi to everybody, Tim.
Hi, guys. My name's Tim. I'm the director of online experience at That Game Company, which means that I focus on the economy and long-term retention of the game, the user experience for the weeks, months, and hopefully years that people stick around in the game for.
I'm curious about the idea of like what goes into starting a game like this. You know, it has to last a long time. When you are beginning to build out an experience like that, that is made for longevity, what's the beginning of the process actually look like?
Well, Sky was actually really interesting because I joined the project 3 years ago when it was in the middle of pivoting away from being more of a linear game towards being one of these live service products, which evolves with time. And my experience prior to TGC was very much in these simulation style games that become almost hobbies. You know, they are things that you play for 5 to 10 minutes at a time over multiple sessions in the day and are meant to be played for months. And so I came and joined the team and started to look at Sky, the game that they had, and through the lens of, you know, how would somebody approach this as something which is part of their daily routine? And so they had a really powerful core arc, you know, so like a 3-hour game, which is very similar to in structure, you know, to along the lines of Flower and Journey, where it has these, you know, really great emotional highs and lows and tells a wonderful story in this beautiful world. But we were still trying to figure out what are the activities that a player will do, say, like the second time they play through that arc or the third time. Are they going to want to play through that in a linear fashion every time, or are they going to want to jump around the world? And how is that going to then impact the emotional arc? So this is like something which has been really new for TGC, and we've been really learning on our feet. But the process that I brought in, which, you know, I used at the company I worked with previously, Runaway, is that we would just run through an exercise of imagining the daily life of a player. What are they seeing when they come into the game? What are the very light touch, positive interactions that we can give them to quickly provide some feedback and give them some agency and some progress in the world, whether that's, you know, just collecting some currencies or saying hi to their friends? And then how can we layer in levels of depth in terms of the amount of time that a player needs to spend in the game to have a productive session, and also their sense of accomplishment?
Your team has always put a lot of emphasis on building games that do have an emotional core, that are trying to convey something to the player or trying to build understanding with the player. Is that at odds with the way that you would build a live service game?
It's a fair question. And the instinct, I think, from a lot of developers is, you know, to assume that a live service game, because so much of it has been driven by your gacha and your timer mechanics and these, your monetization models now that, you know, are not perceived as, you know, as a positive or healthy, you know, customer relationship, I think for very, very good reasons. But the format, though, of having an online world where things are changing each day and there is a flexible monetization model where, you know, people can choose to engage with or not, I actually think that, you know, that is a really healthy type of economy for a fan, you know, of a game to be engaged with, because at its base level, you know, our whole game is free. Everyone can play through all of the story without spending a dime. And we do seasons every, you know, 3 months. So we have new stuff come in, which expands on the story of the game and gives some people some new items to collect. But really, if they are interested in monetizing in the game, then it's very much an optional, mostly a cosmetic sort of transaction. We like to think that we're focusing on a very, you know, healthy, very generous, you know, style of monetization as well. Whereas if people do buy our season pass, then they get a lot of mileage out of that. You know, in the same way that, you know, seasonal passes have become a very popular model, I think for a very good reason, is they feel fair, they feel like a great return on investment for a player, and they're very much a no-brainer for someone who is a fan of the game and they're returning, you know, most days, you know, to put down $10 to unlock this content for the next 3 months. It just seems, you know, very, very fair. And in a similar way to how, you know, Netflix and Amazon have provided these immensely valuable services for a very reasonable subscription fee, I think that's more of the model that players feel is compatible with their value sets, as opposed to these more manipulative, you know, gacha models, or, you know, having to pay to speed up timers, or these very competitive style games where it does really feel like you have to open your wallet to be able to just maintain your rank or whatever. Those do feel manipulative, and that's not the stuff that we're interested in. But we do feel very strongly that a live service product can not only just survive, but it can actually really thrive by following a model where people are, you know, our players are well looked after, and they come into our game and feel a sense of, you know, serenity and belonging and connectedness, instead of a sense of, you know, tension and manipulation.
So then where does, like, the narrative and emotion fit into a game that needs to last for so long?
Since we've launched the game, we've had 6 seasons of content. So we run a season at the moment they are 10 weeks long, and then we have a 2-week gap. So there's roughly one each quarter. And those seasons we use as an opportunity to introduce new things for players to collect. But really, the primary usefulness of the seasons in our mind is an opportunity to expand on the lore and the characters and the world, and really show players a new side to the history of the world of Sky. And so, for example, this new season that we're just releasing in a few weeks' time, the season of Sanctuary, its underlying theme is one of relaxation, restoration, and that's very much a response to what's happening in the world right now. I mean, we could all do with a bit of a, you know, a vacation and a place really just to soothe our minds and chill out. And so we're responding to things in real time, but also using those real world inspirations or those themes that we want to encapsulate in each of the seasons as a way to show you new spirits and new stories within the world. So for those that don't know Sky, it's a game about a kingdom in the clouds that an ancient civilization had been wiped out many, many years ago. And you're a Sky child who has been sort of essentially born on the shores of this world and flying up into the kingdom in the clouds. And a lot of the story revolves around you meeting some of these spirits of the ancient race and, you know, trying to understand what their life was like, how things essentially went wrong in this world. And so each season we introduce more of these spirits. All these spirits have different cosmetics and items, magical items that you can collect from them. So there's generally speaking, a new piece of functionality that comes in, but there's always, you know, six new stories for you to discover. And oftentimes there are new environments as well.
With these kinds of games, you guys have to collect like player data and player behaviors. I think a lot of people just think that it's done to exploit, and it is done to exploit in a lot of cases, to exploit player behaviors to get the maximum revenue from them. But I think of like something like Ender's Game, which, you know, a problematic author, but like the character there was like, you have to love your opponent before you can destroy them or whatever.
Sure.
Is there a potential there to like love the player through gaining this data and the understanding of how they play your game?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, we're very respectful of our players, you know, time and attention and, you know, and data and feedback that they give us. But we do, you know, we try to use all of the different inputs that we could possibly get as a way to understand better how we can improve the game, how we can be doing a better job and achieving our goals. And just this year has been a really interesting time for us because we really, as a company, are new to this live service game, and we're approaching our first anniversary for the for Sky, which is really exciting. But it also sort of signified to us that this is not going to be just like a fly-by-night game. Like, the game continues to grow. We've been very lucky to receive some great awards this year, and so we just released on Android a couple of months ago. That, you know, it just continues to grow. So now we have to make some of these decisions, which are based around, okay, well, assuming this game now is going to be around for years, you know, where should we best spend our time? And instead of just kind of scrambling to fix whatever is broken or just do whatever cool idea comes to us in the time, like, we really had to try and establish a discipline of stepping back and asking ourselves, you know, what do we want this game to feel like? You know, what do we want this game to achieve? What do we want this game to say? And how do we want this game to move the industry, you know, especially, you know, mobile social games forward? And set some really aspirational goals for ourselves. But, you know, that's only one lens, you know, through which we have to filter our design. Another incredibly important lens is, what does this game mean to our players? And there's all sorts of different ways that we can collect that information. We do have an analyst on staff who looks at just the pure gameplay stats. So, you know, where are people getting stuck in the game, for example? Or, you know, which items are they getting attracted to? You know, what time of day are they playing? Where are they playing from? This sort of stuff. So that's what we call your quantitative data. So it's just the pure numbers. And then we run a lot of qualitative analysis as well. And that can range anywhere from us sitting down playing the game and using our intuition to understand how the game maps against the values and the mission that we've set out for ourselves. And then there's one-on-one interactions that we have with our fans. So we have a group of your core players who we call the Shepherds, who help us out a lot on Discord and within the community. And we've been doing weekly playtest sessions with them lately, where we just get online and four of us across disciplinary team and four of the Shepherds will come online. We'll just play the game together and we'll just talk to them about it and understand what parts of the game they really love, which parts of the games are, you know, frustrating them, and just see what they're up to within the game, see the game through their eyes. I do believe that, like, you know, that art shouldn't be, you know, too shaped necessarily by like a market demand. But with this type of experience, it's a collaborative process. You know, the game now belongs to the fans almost as much as it belongs to us. Like, we started on this trajectory where we, you know, said, hey, we want to make a game, a mobile social game, which is different, that is about giving and it's about camaraderie and it's about connection and friendship. And we put this thing out there, but then from the moment that the players started to become involved with it, it became this process of seeing what they were drawn to, what for those players that did return to the game every day, why was it and why did they love it? what were they doing? And since then, it's been this like collaborative process. So I'd like to think that we are using all those different inputs and all that sort of data in a balanced and fair sort of way. And I hope that and generally speaking, that the industry manages to shed some of its, stigma around using data and free-to-play mechanics in your manipulative ways.
The way you're doing it, the way you describe it there, seems like it would be better for the long-term health of the way to use that sort of data and to build that sort of relationship with the player. Like there are maybe more extreme short-term gains to be made, but maybe that burns things out a bit quicker. Is that the sense that you get?
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't really think that thinking of your player, like, you know, in the same way that a casino would, you know, and trying to essentially just get as much money out of them as possible is really going to lead to a long-term positive relationship that you have with that person. Ultimately, I think what's important for any brand, whether it's a game studio or you're a bike company or a food company or whatever, is that you become part of their life, which is a positive influence. The player or your customer comes to appreciate your game as part, or just whatever company it is, as part of their daily routine, and they cherish it. And when they look at the game or that product that you're selling them, then they feel proud to belong to the community that is supporting that business. And that's ultimately our goal, is for people to be proud of playing Sky and to want to share it with their family and their friends, because it's giving them an experience that your other games have not. And in fact, it's, you're bucking the trend of being something, instead of it just being a pure time waster, that it's actually bringing some daily light and life into their routine, and it's giving them a new way to connect with their friends and family. And instead of it being kind of this your habit that they are kind of ashamed of and they want to hide from people, instead it's something which they really look forward to and can imagine themselves playing for a long time to come, and are eager to share with their friends, and are happy to spend on, not because they feel that they have to fill some timer or get on some leaderboard or something, but because they respect and admire the brand that is presenting that experience to them, and they want to perpetuate the value set that that brand stands for.
I know this project is meant to go on for a long time, but in the future, you probably would start a new project from scratch. What have you learned from this that you would apply to that next project in the future?
Yeah, sure. So the thing that I think we've learned, the biggest lesson, is that people approach the mobile phone as a platform very differently to the way that they approach a console, which seems like it should be a logical thing, right? But I think the industry changed a lot, like while we were making this game. And we also had to change a lot. We just had to learn a lot about how people do like to interact with games on a phone. It was a new platform for us. It was a whole new monetization model for us. So I think like next time around, we would certainly make some changes as far as the control scheme is concerned, and just like the way that a player is eased into a play session, so that it's a little bit more respectful and mindful of the restrictions on a phone, and the fact that you're getting there's a lot of competition from a lot of different apps on the homepage of your player's screen. And what I was talking about before, like that day in the life sort of approach, thinking a bit more meaningfully about that and how we can have layers of gameplay. I really feel like there's so much opportunity in the mobile game space, and that we, even though it now represents half of the revenue in the games industry, or more than half, which is just crazy, I do really feel like we've stagnated creatively for a long time in the mobile game space. And It feels like we're just kind of going through the motions now. Like all the things that are in the top 100 are really just iterations on existing mechanics, whether that's Match 3 or 4x. And that to me seems a little sad, because there's so much more we could do with that device. I mean, Pokemon Go was a massive event, for the whole games industry, I think, and it really woke people up to how a different type of gameplay could really accelerate like a game like that to the top of the charts and keep it there for a long time. And I think a big part of that obviously was just the Pokemon brand, but it was also just the novel execution of that design with that new technology in mind. It just used more about what's special about a phone, and I hope that we can do more of that. Like, I hope we can lean more into what makes the phone different from the console and the sorts of experiences that could only exist on a phone, as opposed to a lot of the stuff which we're seeing, which is just kind of a console game or a PC game just adapted to a mobile screen. And that doesn't really excite me personally. I see great opportunity for the future of mobile games and thinking about how we thread them into people's lives throughout the day, as opposed to just something which they crash on the couch with at the end of the night, and actually work as a vehicle for keeping friends and family in touch, and a tool to help people stay mindful and present and well.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing about it, like trying to find the way that phones are going to provide different opportunities to interact with games. I've been writing about games for a while now, and I remember, I really got my start around 2012, and for years after that, writing about the business of games meant, writing about the mobile space kind of already getting pretty stagnant, in that the same games were always the ones that people were talking about and playing and making the most money. Now, there was, of course, interesting stuff happening, but it was less, it was just not, never at the top. And I guess my question would be to you, that potential to do interesting things in mobile gaming, is it still there? And are you said you're excited about it, but you see that the potential for it to succeed as well as just to experiment in?
Yeah, I do. And it gives me a lot of hope that Apple and Google, we've got some great relationships there, and those guys have pointed out our game and said, this is more of the direction that we wish the industry was going in, which is great. And it gives us hope for not just our company, but like the idea that we could trailblaze to a degree and show that, hey guys, there is a different way of doing this. You don't have to fall into all of the same old traps. And I should be careful as well to make sure that, we don't think that we've got it figured out at all. We've got a long way to go, and there's so much more for us to understand about, how Sky is going to reach its potential, how social games on mobile, could work. But, I feel like we've done a few things differently now, where, we hopefully have opened people's eyes and seen, oh, wow, okay, so we don't just have to do, the same old thing. And so whether it's getting support from the likes of Apple or Google, or whether it's attracting the interest of some investors, there's a lot of data now to suggest, that the mobile space is, or now it's the biggest space in the whole industry. So there's a lot of money here, but there is room to find new competitive advantage. And that's the thing which I hope people really believe in and try to do something really different, because that's the way ultimately, Chinova Chen, our creative director, talks often about the blue ocean, red ocean strategy, and that the mobile game space at the moment and the established genres is very much a red ocean. It's full of sharks that are all just trying to one-up each other on the quality of the specific implementation of a tried and true mechanic with a few tweaks. And for all we know, there could still be, and surely are still, millions of people out there that are not playing games on their phone day to day, because we haven't really touched the whole spectrum of potential emotions and types of gameplay that we can express through these devices. And so, yeah, we feel very, very strongly that there is still a number of blue oceans out there to discover on mobile, and hopefully this initial success that we've had with Sky can start to point the way both for us and for some other developers.
I find that very heartening because it's over the years I've fallen off of a lot of mobile game playing just because I when I look at it, I do see that red ocean and I'm like, I've experienced that before. I've gone through that now. I don't need to go try the next one in that same exact space. At the same time, though, you guys put Sky on Nintendo Switch. Is that something that you would also do in the future if a game is, chugging along on mobile? You would be like, okay, there are still console platforms out there that make sense to support, or is that just like Sky happened to work out for that platform?
Yeah, well, I think Sky is like a perfect game for the Nintendo Switch because it's portable. It has that beautiful widescreen format. It is great to play with the controller. If you can type on the screen for your keypad, it's also good. So there's a lot of it feels like a very good fit for the hardware. And we will look at other platforms going in the future with Sky, and in particular, Sky is interesting because it's not just a adventure game you play through start to finish, but it's really just as much a social network. So it's a place for people to hang out. So the more different formats that we have for people to be able to join their friends and family and hang out, the better. And so we've seen this with Fortnite, and that they started out on consoles and PC, but then went over to Android and iPhone as well. And now kids are logging in across all those different platforms, mobile, console, PC, to join their friends and hang out together, and then watch these amazing events that they're doing in live music concerts and stuff. And that, like, to me, feels like the real future, the future of gaming or virtual spaces, where I can log in from whatever console or whatever device it is that I have that's capable of running the graphics, and be able to jump in with my friends and see these these live events. For our future games, I'm not sure. It just depends. I think it's possible that the more we lean into you can only play this game on a phone, then the harder it is to make it like totally cross-platform. For example, you couldn't put Pokemon Go on a PlayStation, right?
Exactly. Then,
no point. And so I think it just depends on what the next game looks like. It's possible we explore both directions, and really Sky has got a lot of legs in it left. We hope to bring it to many more platforms, and we hope that over the coming years it will become one of these places that people love to hang out, and whether they want to go and experience a part of the core narrative or arc that day or not, there's something for them to do there, and there's something to bring them together, whether that's playing some instruments for one another, or reading up on the lore, or just chatting on a mountaintop.
Excellent. Tim Nixon, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Anything you want to plug? Tell people where to find the game?
Yeah, sure. Well, the game is thatskygame.com, or you can just search for Sky on the App Store or Google Play. And we're coming to Switch sometime later this year as well. And if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at NixonTim.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you to everybody for listening. We'll be back next week with another new episode. Until then, have a good one and goodbye.